This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittline.
What do you think on this day that most of us will never forget, being 9/11? I especially wanted someone who was a healer on the show tonight, because I feel that healing is something that we must especially look at on this anniversary that affected so many of us. So I'm very pleased to bring on an absolute artistic angel, my friend Sandra Fioramonte Sabine. There's an incredible level of beauty in metaphysical work, but you don't always get to see it with your outside eyes. Sandra brings it fully into being with her magnificent spirit paintings. We'll talk about how the illness and the passing of her first husband opened the door for her to combine her artistic talent with her compassionate heart in order to open up the Liverpool Art Center and study healing arts as a profession. The arts have become a way for her to help people work through self-healing and self-discovery. Sandy, I'm so glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Corby. You're a true artist with your words.
Let's go back. You know, we all have the I started out as a child story. Let's talk about how art was important to you from what age, and how all of a sudden the psychic stuff started to partner with it.
Well, the psychic stuff, actually, my first recollection was around 2 years old. So that was definitely early on a big part of who I knew I was going to be throughout my entire life, this lifetime. But the arts came into play when my mother opened a center, much like the one that I run now. And so for many years during my childhood, it was filled with artists galore. I could hang an art show by the time I was 11 years old, you know, and it was just surrounded by creativity and inspiration of all sorts, all mediums. And so I was constantly around things that were outside of the box. Until I was probably maybe around 15 years old. So the two naturally came together early on in my life.
Were you an artist because your mother was an artist, or was it something that kept knocking in your soul and saying, hey, me, let me out?
Oh my gosh, it had to knock me upside the head, throw me on the ground, and twist me up inside to come out. It didn't actually strike me that I was worthy of being what's entitled an artist until I was almost 30.
Really? But hadn't you played with paints or other media before that?
I did. For many years, I always did things kind of backwards. So I was always doing things creatively from the way I parented, you know, kept my house, you know, and all the different things. I'd always do things backwards and creative. So I started, I didn't want my kids in daycare, so I opened up a daycare center, and I created kindergarten readiness programs through art media. So for years, I did this out of my home for as a state-licensed child care provider. And so I did that through most of my 20s. And that's how I really kept my hands in the arts. But it was kind of behind closed doors. I just had a toe in. I wasn't in the art world, so to speak. So I did it backwards in that respect.
What catapulted you from backstage to front stage with the artwork?
A very life-altering situation. My first husband, father of my two kids, was diagnosed with terminal colon cancer, and 18 months of any alternative therapies that we could possibly imagine getting our hands into, it just brought him to a point where he'd crossed over. And there was one moment during his battle I remember watching him on the floor, just crying his eyes out and realizing he regretted not doing anything more than working and saving his money. And I just looked at him and knowing I'm not going to be there. At any point in my life, I'm not going to be there. So I knew the arts were going to come to the forefront. Little did I know it would have as much to do with the healing arts and the psychic potential that had been bottled up until it just all came together in a matter of years. But I had closed my daycare and opened an art gallery inside of 9 months of my husband's passing. Well, two years, forgive me.
What was it that was going to heal you by opening the art center? Because that had to be part of it.
I had to be part of a community. I think that's the biggest part I was looking for without really knowing it. And I had to create a creative community. And that's really the premise of the business that I opened in the beginning.
Okay. So take us to the first day the Liverpool Art Center opens. You don't know if people are going to come in. You have no idea what the future is like. What did that first space look like?
I dove into the local art community, and I immediately represented about 50 local artists. So it was a gallery. I wasn't teaching at the time. And it was packed from day one as a selling place, place to sell artwork. I wasn't nervous. I seemed to have a lot of community support. That lasted about maybe a month, and it just crashed to the bottom. And there was no income for a good, I don't know, maybe solid year, and that was pretty tough for me. Until people started asking for me to teach, and I resisted for about a good 9 months. And I had this one student, retired city school principal, and he had been at the forefront of a local arts program in his school, and he was insistent I could teach him. And I started teaching him in 2003, I think, and he's still a student of mine. So it opened the door to reaching out to people in a very different way than I ever had before. I had to share a lot of myself, a lot of my own fears and insecurities. But I was also studying some different healing modalities that it started to play a role inadvertently. And we would just, both of us would actually feel better by the time the classes or lessons were over.
What was it that gave you the willies about teaching? Because I've seen you do it. You're a natural.
I didn't have that college degree behind me, you know, to point at to say, yeah, I can teach you something. So I really felt inadequate.
Okay.
So that was the biggest part. But also, I just felt like, I don't know, I was just doing my thing. I was just doing what I do. I create art and I can show you a little bit here and there, but you know, who am I to show you something? I would much rather watch somebody just explore things themselves than have me show them something. That's to this day, that actually is how I teach.
Okay.
I think people learn a lot more.
Let's talk about a little bit about what you show. I want to talk a little bit about your spirit paintings. I think I've sat for you twice, each one gorgeous, but totally different. How did you decide to do spirit paintings in the first place?
Well, I was experiencing an artistic block at one point when I was running the gallery and doing the selling art. And it's terrifying when you can't paint anything and you're heavily reliant on that creative process to make a living. And so one night, 2:00 in the morning, Pink Floyd blaring, I just started throwing on acrylic paint. And I made some of the ugliest canvases you've ever seen. And I noticed afterwards I felt better. I just felt better having moved the paint. And I actually continued doing this for some time. And I was teaching classes at the time, so my students were seeing these weird canvases all over. And so eventually they started to evolve. And I was still learning a lot more of the different alternative healing therapies, and kind of the two of them came together. And things started clicking, and I'm kind of a psychology book junkie. And so things like color therapy and art therapy were always something I had a book in my hand about. And what ended up happening is I was discovering things about myself through this process, not even trying to, just trying to get myself ahead. And my students were watching this happen and asking questions. And one day someone asked, you know, can you do this for me? And so I did, and it just really snowballed from that point on. It just happened naturally.
When you're doing a spirit painting for somebody, what is the process? Not necessarily, you know, well, I use acrylics or whatever, but a spirit painting is like a portrait to the nth degree. How do you get in that kind of a space? How do you work with your client?
I've always had a slight difficulty trying to explain this, but basically, this is a form of active meditation for me as the conduit, as the person just being in the moment, letting myself completely go, and something that artists have a tremendous amount of difficulty doing is letting go of end product, meaning I'm not trying to paint something. There's no trying or no effort. So I'm literally kind of going out of body. I'm moving my hands. I'm allowing the paint to just flow, intuitively choosing the colors. So once I've connected with the person, I'm in this meditative state. And it's this sense of movement through me and around me. And I allow my mind to wander. So the person afterwards, when they're saying, my gosh, what just happened? You know, what does this mean? Or they want some kind of a reading or feedback. I have sensations through my body that I'm going through, or thoughts or visions in my mind. And I'm able to convey that makes sense to them. Doesn't always necessarily make sense to me. And it usually ends up as some kind of a confirmation that they were thinking about a particular person or moment or life challenge. And it's helped them to just be in a space with somebody and be seen. And then they just watch this painting evolve from white space to animals moving, to faces coming and going, to new colors evolving. And then sometimes they even feel this physical sensation and movement through them. So it's like we're able to connect in a way that you really rarely get to from one human being to another in a split moment, and then share it. So it's just this profound sense of humanity.
Do you have a story of a really profound healing session, if you will, from one of the spirit paintings, where you broke something open for someone that they did not know themselves?
Endless. I don't know if there's just one. There's just...
Pick one.
First of all, share the every story. Time is just so incredible. But I think it was profound. A woman recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And I believe she was still in a state of denial. And to be in a moment where she saw somebody see her, I think it was the first time she couldn't be in denial. And I really felt it in my heart, as if I had come to terms with the diagnosis with her and for her. And it broke something open so that she could then begin to make some really important decisions for her next step. To be a part of that journey with someone goes back to my husband's battle and my current husband, who lost his wife to lung cancer. It's just a very profound place for me to be, and brings it full circle and complete gratitude.
Now, speaking of your current husband, that's a little bit of a love story right there. How has that affected your work?
How did it affect my work? Is that what you said?
Yes. You know me. I'm always good for the happy husband-wife stories.
Well, it took him. I met him at a point where I was done. I was like, you know what? I'm good alone. I love my life. And so it took him 3 weeks to even get me to go on a date with him. So I was really convinced that I would need to sacrifice this beautiful mission that I've been blessed with. And he's military man, 30 years retired. There's no way this guy's fit in my life. But what's happened is he has opened his own heart, his own mind, to his journey. And we walk this parallel path of healing, him in his own way and me in mine. And what's become is, he's like, a safety net for me. So if I'm falling, he's there, but I get all this space to move in and out of where I need to be to grow and heal. And it's a beautiful relationship. You know, it's really, I call him a miracle. I did during our wedding vows, and he definitely is my miracle.
Has your art changed or blossomed on the after marriage side as opposed to the before marriage side? You said before, oh, well, I knew I was going to be okay, but you and Dan are extremely happy, very well partnered. And to me, I know that my relationship with Carl affects my work, makes me kinder, deeper, better. Because you and Dan had such a very conscious road about matching your energies, how has that worked for you in your art and also in how you teach and reach your students?
That's a great question. It's a sense of, because I really walk this road a little bit more militantly because I had to. I was raising two boys on my own and in a business world and a woman. It was really hard. I didn't feel like anyone had my back. So this is the first time possibly in my life that I feel like, wow, someone authentically has my back. So not that I leap first and ask questions later now, but I have someone that I can kind of roll things through and say, hey, what do you think? And I really trust the feedback. There's no other intention except for what's the best for us to be able to push forward. So I guess it's this strong sense of I don't have to constantly be looking over my shoulder.
That's always a wonderful thing when our guy supports us. So how has he, does he work at all in the art center? Does he take part in it at all? What does he do?
Yes. In our building, half of it was, for the past couple of years, he's been doing the framing aspects, but he's dialed it back more because we've grown so much. We've taken on a second studio in that space. And now he's more, administrative, and taking on events, planning, organizing, things like that.
What a guy.
Yeah, he's incredible. We just did the New York State Fair show. We processed over 1,000 pieces of artwork in 3 days. And
what?
He hung, literally wait, hung
back
over.
It up. Back it up. How do you process 1,000 pieces of artwork in 3 days?
I have a phenomenal staff. I really do. They're just, and half of them are volunteers. They just love what we do. They love our mission. But this guy hung over 300 pieces in 2 days. Yeah.
Okay. So when you say you processed 1,000, you didn't paint 1,000.
No, no. Process means we took them in. We took them in. We judged them. I hired the judges. It's a competition for New York State Fair.
What was the kind of message that you saw running through this artwork?
Oh, great question. Self-realization. There is such an incredible amount of that coming through artwork, especially in the young community these days.
When you say young community, what do you consider young?
Between 12 and early 20s.
Okay. So basically teenage years popping just over to young adult.
Yes.
Okay.
My favorite group to work with, beyond anything else I do, my passion is in the teen community because they have little to no resource.
When all of a sudden you give them the resources, not only the paint, the canvas, the brushes, but the belief, what's that like? The belief in them?
The belief in the young
You're
community?
You're saying to them, I believe in you. You have power inside you. Put it on the canvas.
In that moment, I feel like when you're a young kid, and just a child, and you want to be president, you want to be something big, and you have every faith in the world you're going to be that, that you can change the world. In that one sentence, and I say it every week to at least one or more teenager, I feel like there is an opportunity to change the world in that one statement, that you can do this. You have the power. Set your boundary or break it open. And I say it every single week.
And do you see the transformation on those faces when you say it?
Immediately. Barely a second goes by. Immediately. And the art studio gives a place. It's such a sacred space for people to come to. And you don't really, you just think, oh, they come to paint, but you see yourself. You see your fear, you see your challenge, you see your transformation, and sometimes it's in a 15-minute period, sometimes it's in a 10-year period, and it doesn't matter how old you are, how new you are, or how long you've been doing this, it's an opportunity to be authentic, and you can't hide. The process is pure.
That's so tough these days because everyone is told, you have to look like this, you have to be like this, you have to sound like this. And if someone doesn't like the way you look, be, or sound, now you can get arrested or you can get expelled. I mean, it is not what it was when you and I were a kid. So
Absolutely.
Giving them this place of safety for delving deep and finding out who is at core is an absolute miracle.
I agree.
So if people wanted to find out a little more about you and the center, where would they go?
We have a website, LiverpoolArtCenter.com or artsandhealing.com, either one, same website. It's chock full of our schedule, videos, pictures, descriptions of all the services. We have two studios. I've just took on two more artists in residence who are now becoming teachers and organizing new events. We also have a new healing room. Incorporating sound healing, aromatherapy, Reiki, meditation, group gatherings, intuitive gatherings, and a lot more up to come. And our new retreats are our baby. We've just started holding retreats where you can come and experience drumming, painting, healing, Reiki, and these amazing interconnected, interwoven experiences for 2 and 3 days at a time, and it's really incredible.
That's something I'm going to want to talk about in the second half of the show. If you're just joining us, it's Fire Through Spirit. I'm Corby Mitlide, and this week my guest is Sandra Fioramonte-Sabine, and we're talking about art as healing and healer as artist. We'll be back on the other side of the commercial break, finding out a little bit more about the classes and experiences at the Liverpool Art Center, and perhaps talking about how you can bring something like that to wherever you live. So stay with us on Fire Through Spirit.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit EmpowerRadio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mitlide next on Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. and sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
20 years ago, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. The act was a huge step forward for the 50 million people in this country living with a disability, and the culmination of years of effort by those who marched and spoke up and refused to be treated as second-class citizens. It helped renew the promise that here in America, we're defined not by our limitations, but by our potential. As we celebrate the 20th anniversary of this historic legislation, it's important to remember that we're still fulfilling that promise. We're still working to secure the rights guaranteed by the ADA, the right to live and work without limits, the right to equal justice under the law, and the right of every person in this country to reach for the American dream. We've come a long way since 1990, and I'm committed to making even more progress in the years ahead. Visit disability.gov to see how you can help.
Brought to you by the American Association of People with Disabilities and the Ad Council.
A bright future starts with a healthy lifestyle.
Pinocchio, Liberty, I'm a real boy!
Good nutrition and physical activity are fuel for your child's mind and body.
Now you're talking!
And the food pyramid will help you find the right balance of everything you and your child need. Grains, vegetables, fruits, oils, milk, and meats and beans.
Nothing can stop me now.
Just remember, smart choices from every food group, along with the right amount of physical activity, can put everyone on the path to better health.
Look, the wishing star.
You don't have to make a wish for a healthier you to come true. Just eat right.
Here's an apple.
Be active.
Come on, I'll race you home.
And make it balance.
Attaboy, Pinocchio.
A healthy lifestyle can lead to great things for you and your child. Visit MyPyramid.gov to learn more. That's MyPyramid.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline.
Welcome back to a wonderful special show. My guest is Sandra Fioramonte Sabine. We're talking about art as healing and healer as artist. I've showcased Sandra in the first part of the show, but what I really want to talk about is some of the wonderful, wonderful work that she is doing at the actual Liverpool Art Center that she has started. Because even if you're not near central New York, which is where we are, she's got some wonderful ideas about how to work with everybody from children to adults so that art breaks you open and expands you. So, Sandra, let's talk a little bit about what you would consider your core program at the Liverpool Art Center. If I walked in and said, so what's this place about and what do I need to do to get started, what would you suggest?
Well, I might ask you a little bit about, you know, what your commitment is, because we have one-day workshops as well as ongoing. Mostly what we do in center is we offer ongoing classes in all painting and drawing mediums for youth, teens, and adults. That's 3 days a week. So Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday is when we fit those in. So basically the students choose the medium, the style, and the subject. So you walk into a class and everyone's working on something different. And I teach actually intuitively in the class. So I'm getting a sense of where people are and meeting them where they are. They set the pace. And they can explore any different medium and jump from one medium to the next, which is kind of rare in a studio setting. You're usually working on one thing. Everyone's working on the same thing. But so it's a unique setting. And I teach all the classes that way. But some people come in and they're not really ready to commit to something ongoing because with that, that's, you know, it's a month's commitment. You come every week. So I offer one-day workshops. And I would say my favorite thing to teach is meditative painting. And that's where I invite people to step into what I do in an intuitive session. I do a guided meditation. It's a 2-hour class. And when I bring them to the meditation, I pull them out very quickly, and they're enjoying aromatherapy, an incredible music experience. And then they're painting, acrylic painting, in this meditative state for a good half an hour or so. And it's one of the most profound experiences that I've seen for a number of years with groups anywhere from 3 to 50. So that's probably one of my favorite ones to offer in-house. And also I travel and teach that elsewhere.
What happens when you've got someone who is so blocked? It is not uncommon with our generation to be so surrounded by you have to do it right, you have to do it perfect, that even with the guided meditation, they've got brush in hand and they're staring at that canvas and they're afraid to put paint on it. How do you break that loose for them? Because they don't want to get it wrong.
Oh, yeah. And that's pretty much the norm. Anyone who walks in this door is they're in that mindset. And the fear is paralyzing for most. It depends on what setting they're in. So if they're in a one-day workshop, I can do what I can and offer them some compassion and, a pamphlet to say, hey, we've got some classes. So it's a little difficult because that's something that you really need some time to do some self-reflection. So in the ongoing classes where I see that most often, and it's a very subtle approach that I take. It will start with, I run them through a series of activities in the first session. And right off the bat, I know what medium they're a good match for, what skill level they're at, the best approach right away to take them through, where they're going to experience the least amount of resistance. And that gives them the best opportunity for a win, and that's what I call it when they're able to bring something to completion and have that sense of accomplishment right off the bat. And it's usually within the first 2 or 3 weeks. Now, if I have someone that is absolutely not going to go there with it, I will give them a certain amount of reflection. It's an observation that I do. And I'll walk them through a series of questions and bring them to the point by the end of class where they're actually realizing that they're completely resistant to the idea of something new happening in their lives. And that's really what it boils down to, is they're not open to that change, that shift, that possibility that they might need to do some internal work to make this happen.
What are most people afraid of? What is the thing that stops them?
Fear of failure. Yeah, that's it boils down to it. There's not much else I can add to that. They're afraid in the end they won't be able to do it. And most people have waited sometimes years to come in here. I had one woman last week come in and say, I've held your card for the past 9 years, and it's crumpled up in her hand. 9 years it took her, and she stood in the door and barely walked in the door until I walked over to her for fear she wasn't going to be able to do that. The white paper was just completely terrifying to her.
So that's one of the reasons why you feel it's so important to work with kids before they become paralyzed adults?
Absolutely. Most of them are paralyzed by the time they even come to me. I've got 8-9-year-olds that are afraid to make a mistake on a piece of paper that cost me 3 cents. So yeah, I think it's imperative because you can't move anywhere if you're afraid to even try.
What is it, in your mind, that has us all so frightened? And I don't mean failure, but how did we get here? People didn't used to be this afraid of failure. In the 60s, in the 70s, people were experimental. People wanted to find new, different, better, and let's just go wading out into the mud and see. What has people so locked up now?
I think everyone has their opinions on what's actually happened here, but I can really pull from the volume of students that come through here and just listening to what they're saying, because when you create art, there's chitter chatter. And So I've got people from, you know, from, I've got the older groups that come in here. I've got the younger groups. And it really is this failing like the collapsing of the school systems, the collapsing of our government, the, you know, people are afraid of what's to come. So parents are all over their children to get, you know, A's, straight A's, so that they can get scholarships, because parents aren't going to have the money to put their kids through college. And people that come in here and they're from the generation of, you know, their retirement is gone. Their dream was to retire and paint. And here they can't even afford an art class. So by the time they've come here, they're just terrified that if they spend this $1, they're not going to be able to take care of themselves in their years to come. And I just really think it's from the collapsing that we're seeing on a much larger scale.
You're not going to get any argument from me on that. And yet, when we see this kind of collapse, the only thing that will save us is the ability to walk through change.
Yeah.
Change is inevitable. What doesn't change and grow dies. Yeah. So for those who are listening and are maybe in their own fear pit, how can their taking a piece of paper and, hell, buy crayons at the dollar store or a set of watercolors there and dare to color outside the lines of their own lives? Can you explain to them how that will help break through some of that fear? Because it will.
Well, it does. There's a couple things that'll happen, because I'm a big advocate. As soon as people leave here, I don't care if they ever come back again, really, to tell you the truth, as long as they keep doing it. Just keep doing it. So there's two things that happen. If you go out and just get this paper, canvas, paint, whatever, sit down and just commit to some time for yourself. One, you're going to take a deep breath. And can't we all use a little deep breath? You know, that time for yourself. And two, you're going to try something that it doesn't have to be something. It's not a job. You don't have to sell it. There's no purpose to it. It just is. And how often do we give ourselves permission to just be in the moment like that? It's rare that we do that. We are not taught that. We're taught the exact opposite. You know, don't waste that paper. Don't waste that paint. And if you can get past all of that and just be in the moment, then that is the biggest gift you can give to yourself. And what happens in that moment is you think, you get this sense of clarity, and your thoughts start to spin in a completely different direction. And, you know, I hope that they go in a positive direction. And things fall away that you were holding on to, because you're breathing, you're moving things, and you're trusting yourself to be okay, regardless of how the outcome happens.
Let's talk about one of your intensives, especially the teenagers. It's one thing to do an hour's worth of painting, even a couple of times a week. How deep do the intensives go? How long do these kids spend in that?
The two-day intensives, they go deep. They go really deep. It's two full days, and they usually have a hard time sleeping because it brings up a lot. And what I do is it's a series of different activities that brings them together, that does some self-reflecting in the beginning. And I ask them to do the in between each of the activities. To do some writing. So we're doing some creative writing, and what comes up in the creative writing is surprising to them, and then we'll have some group time so they can reflect on that. Bring them out into the woods so they've got the natural energies around them. And what that does is they're out of their element completely, so they end up bonding with each other. And by the first round, they're completely open and vulnerable. And this spin happens 2, 3, 4 times throughout the 2-day period. And my hope, and this usually is the case, by the end, they're almost in this pace of this place of, it's almost a numb feeling of self-realization, because they aren't who they walked in being, and they're not sure who they're turning into, but they know for certain they're completely changed forever. And they're ready to walk into that. And it's very bonding for them together as a group. So they're able to talk to each other and have that little community because they've just walked through this together. But because there's all these drawing and sketching and painting things in between that's woven into the program, their art is always this trigger for self-empowerment, self-discovery, and something they can go back to do some self-healing.
Do you think that what they've learned possibly affects their parents in a positive way?
Absolutely. I've seen the interactions between them and the parents manifest this beautiful connection. And if it hasn't gone to that extent, I've seen more compassion between the relationships than I have in past years. So that's very exciting to see that shift.
Are there particular subjects that usually show up on the paper for the teens?
Yes, absolutely. High accounts of substance abuse, suicide, and manic depressive.
So this shows up in the paintings?
Yeah. Yep. Thoughts of all of these things, reflections of all of these things are definitely, I thank God I have some very wonderful resources in the psychological team locally that I can source out kids who really need some internal help. So it has gone to that extent, and I've seen some kids just do some serious transformations through these discoveries because of that.
Does it bother the parents that their kids go in looking normal on the surface and then come out broken open, where they have to address these things?
Parents know. They know when the first time they walk in this door, they absolutely know that this is more than an art center. So it's not surprising to them, and they're tearfully thankful and grateful for the transformations they're seeing.
Good. Now, you know, there's one group that you work with that is completely different, and that is you do some creative classes for special needs adults at the local ARC facility. What is it like working with them?
It's a little different. It's very light. It's very they're so excited. They're so grateful for any little. You give them a pencil, and they're like, "Thank you," and so excited. It's a completely opposite end of the spectrum, breath of fresh air. There needs to be more of it, because the healing that takes place in those classes are just phenomenal. I wish they would have arts in all centers like theirs. We do a lot of different things in other local centers that are very similar, but there still isn't enough resources to get it where it needs to be.
Okay, and before we leave this list, I want to talk to you about something that is not paint and not paper, and that's the drumming, which is so visceral and so literally tribal forming. When did you bring that in?
That was in I believe 2008, might have been earlier than that. I walked into went to a peace festival, and I walked into a huge drum circle, and that was it. I was hooked. I've been drumming ever since. And, I was, certified in drum facilitation, through Jim Donovan, one of the founding members of Rusted Root. Amazing, amazing teacher. So I go to Pennsylvania for trainings now and again and retreats, but this really is, it's the same thing. You know, people are afraid to touch the head of that drum like you wouldn't believe. It's a sound. And for me, I'm in a different world when I'm drumming. So I bring that to people in the exact same way that all of these other things play into self-expression. So I host a monthly drum circle every third Friday of the month. It's the longest running drum circle in this area. And I don't ever see stopping it. I also provide therapeutic drumming in a local VA hospital, senior center, St. Camilla. So a lot of the local communities that have people that are really kind of stuck in a place, this moves. It vibrationally moves emotion and just lifts your spirit just by banging on a drum. It's incredible, and it's my passion to share it with other people.
Talking specifically about the vets and PTSD, how does drumming, in a sense, anchor them? Because you see these people and they feel so adrift, literally blown apart by whatever they saw.
True, very true. We specifically bring this to the residents as well as the psych floor. So there's two completely different energies. And it's both the same. They're very ungrounded. They're very displaced. And so, you know, physically and mentally and emotionally. And what drumming provides them in just a few moments is a sense of community and connection. And also, we use the djembe drum because in the center of the drum, with a flat hand and a solid bang on the drum, you get a very low vibration. And that affects the first chakras and really grounds right away. And the drums that I use have very low tones. So I specifically use those in this venue because it helps them to sit down, ground themselves, pull the energy down enough to be able to connect with someone else. Because in the situations they've been in, connecting with others is extremely difficult. And we haven't had any issues in any one of the venues with them not wanting to participate. So it's been very encouraging.
If somebody said, geez, I'd love something around that where I live, but I'm in Sioux Falls, Idaho, or Storm Lake, Iowa, or Oklahoma City, how does somebody start something like this where they are? Either the drumming or the art center or these classes that get people free from their own stoppitude. I'll call it stoppitude.
Well, it's my belief that we are all creative beings and that we are intended to create something. So I like to tell people, what do you like to do that you could do endlessly forever and ever? Time stood still and it would feed your soul. And usually people can come up with one thing. Take that one thing, whether it's drumming, painting, cooking, dancing, singing, it doesn't matter what it is. You have an idea, you create it from nothing. And see where the local library can fit you in for a free seminar, a talk, a group gathering. And visit your local, some cities have places where if you want to start a business, they have a resource center. And see where there's an interest before you dive into it. And just see where it takes you. Because if you follow your passion, you follow your heart, and your intention is to connect with people in a community way, it's going to happen because there is a need for this. And universe is stepping up to really fuel people that are ready to step into this.
And what do you say to those people who say, like you may have early on, who am I to do this?
Who are you not to do this?
What do you mean?
Well, if not you, then who? Meaning there's a need. I've talked about the vets. I've talked about the teams, the people that are really searching for this community, this sense of connection. So if somebody has a passion, a drive, an idea, why not follow that and see how you can take that to its fullest and create something that feeds into this amazing sense of connection that we're all trying to get to.
You said that you do travel to teach this. If somebody from Oklahoma or St. Louis or Charleston wanted to bring you down to teach those classes, would you?
Absolutely. I'd go anywhere. Yep.
Okay.
I have a whole list of workshops. From meditative painting, collage, drumming, anything I teach in the center, I can design a custom or a custom workshop or a themed workshop for just about anything. I've been doing this a long time, and I love doing it.
All right. Tell them again where they're going to find you.
LiverpoolArtCenter.com or artsandhealing.com. You can always give us a call at 315-234-9333.
And to bring it back around to what I first talked about, in this post-9/11 world, how can you equate the art and the drumming with healing what has happened to us since then? The country on September 10th, 2001 was very different than the one 48 hours later.
Absolutely. There is a huge shift in heart, in perspective, in how we approach our daily lives. We've all seen it. I know I felt it. I was very much in the grieving period from the loss of my husband at that time. But I feel that this is a time of action and that we saw that right after. The moment it happened, people were, what can we do? And that's still happening. There's no more sitting back. It is a time to experience life, not watch it. To stop doing the job that makes you feel like you're just going on about your day and find the purpose, find the passion, and follow your heart. It's time now. Why wait any longer?
I will add my own thoughts on that. What came tumbling down on 9/11 was not just the World Trade Center and parts of the Pentagon. It was any feeling that we could be isolationists. We can't. Some people say, so let's make war on those people. And right now we've got another group that is gruesome and visceral and encouraging the world to get darker and blacker. Mm. I'm not saying ignore it. I'm not saying it's not happening. But what I am saying is if you are one candle in all this dark, you've got to flare bright. You've got to light the other candles. You have got to be that light against the darkness. You have got to be the fire in the midst of spirit. I want to thank my guest, Sandra Fioramonte Sabine, for a wonderful, profound, and thoughtful conversation tonight. To all of my listeners, you are the artists, you are the drummers, you are the ones that can go out, take that creative part of yourself, and go heal the world. Sandra and I do it as a profession, but it doesn't need to be professional to make a difference. To all of you, our love, we believe in you. Go make a difference. We'll see you next week.